People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Welcome to the Football Ramble. It is Thursday, the 9th of July. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Luke Moore.
See, that wasn't that hard, was it, Luke?
No, it wasn't as hard. It's never as bad as you think it's going to be, Kate, is it?
No.
It's like once you get in there, it's like a dentist. Once you get in there, it's all right.
A little peek behind the scenes, of course, is that in order to run the titles, someone has to press a button.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would also say that the dentist is horrible sometimes.
Yeah, I didn't mean
it's
that.
Like being waterboarded.
Yeah, the dentist is the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
What I meant to say, you're absolutely right, both of you. What I meant to say was that it's never quite as bad as you think because you've built it up in your own mind.
Mm.
And Kate's got very, I'm trying to think of the right word.
Button
here.
Flustered?
Yeah, very
it's
flustered.
Like a Victorian
about
term.
Pressing the button to introduce herself on the show.
I think you're completely misrepresenting the situation here, Luke, as is your wont.
Yeah.
What I think is that it's more atmospheric. It builds more to the crescendo of like introducing the ramble. If someone is like making the intro happen, and then someone else speaks over it.
Does it make you feel special?
No.
Okay.
It gives the ramble listeners the special treatment.
They don't know, do they? They have no idea what's happening.
No idea at all.
No, they don't know.
They expect it's probably quite simple, I'd imagine. Yeah. As it should be.
As it is. As it very much is. Yeah. On the other hand, Charlie's a producer. Should he be pressing the buttons?
Great question.
He's been paying the big bucks. Yeah. He's been paying the big bucks. He should be doing it.
Also, I didn't expect you two to be that way around, so that took me by surprise.
I always sit here.
Mm. No, as in the aunts.
Oh, okay. I just got on what was written down. Jim, you went second. Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely fine.
Don't lie. There was a massive fight earlier, by the way, guys.
Yeah, it's like a
hierarchy thing.
It's like when Steve McQueen and Paul Newman were in that movie where they had to have exactly the same amount of words in the script.
God.
And their names had to be the same level on the poster, otherwise neither of them would do it. It's like that.
Amazing. Yeah. That is exactly what the ramble is like.
Don't they look so cool? Don't they both look so cool and impressive now you know that?
To be fair though, Jim, Steve McQueen and Paul Newman are both quite cool.
Yeah, it's annoying though.
Isn't it? Because if anything, that should damage their reputation, but it hasn't.
No, it really hasn't. Can do whatever they want.
Yeah, exactly.
The way that Jim tried to kind of enhance his social standing within the context of the ramble this morning, of course, was to enforce on us the corridor of applause as you entered.
Well, there's only three times that's acceptable, if you ask me, which is whenever I enter a room.
Yeah.
The game after you've won the league and just the game.
Yeah.
Or when you've demanded to be subbed off in the 26th minute in your final game for Chelsea.
Yeah, while we're at number 26.
I think that might be the worst thing that's ever happened in the Premier League.
It's one of the few things. I think over the years, the Football Ramble has been quite good at drilling down on things that need the piss taken out of them in football, right? And we did do that with John Terry when he retired. I still now don't think we did enough. I think it should have been a 26 shows of Christmas about that, on how ridiculous that was and looks now in retrospect. But on the corridor of applause that Liverpool were afforded again last night, I think you both allude at least to a very, very interesting point, which is I don't ever remember this happening so much.
Mm.
Jim, you'll remember this better than me. When Arsenal went undefeated, they didn't get a corridor of applause every game the next season until they lost a game.
Well, it was a depressingly long time ago, but I don't remember it happening at all. It must have done, but I don't remember what the
So, Kate, is your
what the rules are on
is
this?
Your understanding that it should be?
Well, it's not a rule, is it?
No, okay,
but no, it's a courtesy.
Yeah, the general consensus is that it should be the game after they win the title and possibly their first home game for the crowd. Yes. Like that. Other than that, that's enough, right?
That's exactly it. So maybe it's that they're trying to get to the stage where they've had enough corridors of applause that they've effectively had as many people clap them in as they would have done if they'd had a full Anfield.
Okay, so maybe you give them a bit of you afford them a little bit of leeway because they've not got fans at games.
But I mean, it's going to take a while to get up to that many people, isn't it?
Yeah, because and also, fans are generally quite enthusiastic when their teams win the league. These other players aren't very enthusiastic at all. No. Like, a lot of people on Twitter have been in touch with us about this, who suggested names for it. James Stewart on Twitter calls it the courtyard of consternation. James at JCSTU says it should be called the funnel of faint praise. And it's not really going over that well. And I just feel like if I were a player, I'd be a professional footballer, you'd be very competitive, you'd want to win. It set the right tone? They won the league a while ago now. They deserve all the credit in the world for doing it because they've been the best team by a mile. But it just gets a little bit full on after a while, I think.
They've got four games left. Is anyone going to have the nerve to not do it? If one team
doesn't do it, it'd be
amazing.
Yeah, Bledsoe was just stood in the middle. He didn't bother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that would be awesome if someone did.
Well, they've got Burnley next.
Burnley will not do it, surely.
Burnley will do beats, like birthday beats. Yeah. Do you remember birthday beats?
Yes.
Yeah, you give them a kicking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe throw them up in the air and catch them.
Not catch them.
Well, could it be could it be to blame for the two early goals, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it might.
Possibly.
Yeah, the overwhelming evidence against that is that Liverpool are much better than Brighton.
Yeah,
but Jim, you say possibly. I agree with you. I think it's a reasonable thing to say that it doesn't really get people off on the right foot.
You don't want to start a game by revering your opponents.
No,
that's the last thing you want to do.
No,
it's like a reverse hacker, basically.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like prostrating yourself at the feet of your opponents and saying, "You're much better than us." I don't know if anyone's noticed, but...
Yeah.
It's really subservient, isn't it? It's a strange thing.
Because the Roy Keane factor here is interesting because, as I said at the time, when Man City gave him the corridor of applause, Roy Keane said, look, to earn respect, you've got to give respect. So I am in favour of it. And I thought he would be against it. Mm. I think by now, Keane's got to be against it by now, surely. Yeah. It's too much now. Too much.
I'd love to know what the criteria of his standards for earning respect.
I reckon,
like a 100-point plan.
They change like the stock market, I reckon. Like fluctuate all the time. Like you can't keep up with it. You have no idea what you're doing wrong. But you're always doing something wrong. But anyway, so Brighton did rally a bit, didn't they, to get back into the game and stuff. But I mean, ultimately, it's one of those. It was a dead rubber, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And as you say, those two early goals were a little bit of a letdown, really, because once they played some good stuff later on, didn't they? And that kind of Davy Proper cock, it was a proper cock up for the 6-minute goal. He just sort of lost it as they were trying to play out from the back. And you don't want to be doing that in front of Naby Keita or anyone from Liverpool, pretty much.
That was a really good example of like how Klopp wants his team to play. And you can sometimes forget that because when it kind of just washes over you how good Liverpool have been all season, you don't necessarily think that the big thing that Klopp wants them to do is push really hard, press high up the pitch. And that was an amazing example of that. And it was a bit like Brighton were very much dealing with that like a team who had just been ordered to applaud their opponents. Yeah. And they were like, is it respectful to keep the ball away from them? We don't really know where the line is now. So they just got caught out twice in 8 minutes. And you just thought, this
Jordan
could be
Henderson's-
a long
Jordan Henderson's a captain, so he gets a free shot, right? He just gets like a free sight. Ah, it's gone in.
And it's fine because he normally puts it over the ball. Oh, he has scored.
He really did though, didn't he? He had so much time that he could really like rifle that one home, which was lovely to watch. But again, we don't necessarily, even though it is, as you say, pretty much a dead rubber, Luke, you don't necessarily expect it to be an exhibition of Liverpool's talents. Yeah.
Although
although that is polite,
the beginning,
I guess.
Very polite. At the beginning.
That's what's on the poster. Come to Brighton for an exhibition of Liverpool's talents. Also, Brighton will be there for a bit.
Yeah,
that's what he said.
Well, it's a seaside town with a lot of a lot of amusements and attractions. So maybe that was what it was billed as. But
a shocking July day, wasn't it?
Yeah.
On that note, let's go to Manchester, shall we?
Yeah, like Newcastle did in body, if not in mind.
Bless them.
Yeah, it was a difficult afternoon. It felt like. Because obviously there's no fans there, so I can imagine that it was almost a bit like a glorified training session, attack versus defence. Yeah. Man City had fewer shots against Newcastle than they did against Southampton in a game which they lost, and they won 5-0.
Well, Newcastle did not sort of have the same approach to the game that Southampton did, and that was actually really obvious from the off. Obviously, you know, depending on the mood City are in and if you're playing them home or away or not, it's going to make a difference. But like it almost felt like watching a really kind of rich man kind of shooting gallery, determined to like win the giant teddy bear, and he can just keep shooting all day because he's got all the money. He'll just buy all the tickets.
Two pockets for the tokens, got nothing else on that day. You carry on.
This is inevitable.
Speaking about showing respect, I feel like Newcastle showed Manchester City a lot of respect in their own box, didn't they?
Absolutely.
They really like standing off them.
Corridors
like, take
of
your time
in the box.
Yeah, extraordinary. It's catching on.
Definitely.
And I think Danny Rose should realise that actually, what's based on the Sheffield United performance, that he could very much still do that job at Spurs. We wanted to. He should have gone for all that upheaval because it would have been de rigueur in North London as well. Can I ask a potentially controversial point? I don't think it's something we've talked about on this show that I can remember, and I'd be interested to get your guys' thoughts on it. Is the current Manchester City points total, despite the fact they just won 5-0, is the current Manchester City like points total of 69 points from 34 games based on the players and the manager and the money they've got? That is a fairly poor return, isn't it? 9 games they've lost this season. They've lost more games than Manchester United. They lost more games than Wolves, more games than Arsenal in the league this season. It's going under the radar a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But I wonder if it's symptomatic of how difficult it is to maintain those standards for such a long time. Though we often talk about how difficult it is to retain a league, but to retain a league twice, obviously, is particularly tough.
That's a drop-off and a half, though.
Oh, it's a huge, huge drop-off. You know what? I was thinking this as I was watching the game. The third goal, which was actually an own goal from Newcastle.
Beautiful bloody own goal, wasn't it? Wow, we should actually have some sort of, you know, own goals faves poll. Yeah. I was like the one when England women lost against Japan. It was absolutely stuck in from pretty much the halfway line.
They're the best ever one is, have you seen the one of the guy who goes to hook the ball away at the far post? It's probably 80s or 90s in the lower leagues. Goes to hook the ball away in the far post, right? Kicks the ball into his own face, breaks his nose, and it goes in the bottom corner. That is the best.
It is magnificent.
We should share that on social media.
You
with people
love
haven't seen it.
Injuries, don't you? Luke
that
Moore?
One. Have you seen? Do you know what
you're
talking about?
It, no.
It is iconic. It is honestly amazing.
I just think if you're not someone who enjoys the fact that someone's broken their own nose with a football, and you can't, what enjoyment can you get out of life? That's what I would say.
That guy has the music from Curb Your Enthusiasm playing in his head all the
wherever
time.
Wherever he goes.
Since that, but yeah, so the third goal, the own goal.
He's thinking, well, I don't even know what this is.
What is this?
It's not been invented yet.
This is a jaunty tune. But yeah, the third goal, which like was almost an own goal twice because it deflected off a deflection.
Yeah,
I think.
It did. Yeah. But, it did.
Really lovely curl on it.
Yeah.
People talk about the game being played at a stroll sometimes.
It was.
But with that goal in particular, and points throughout the game, City were strolling about and Newcastle were too sort of scared to get into it. I know they've got to keep their shape. I know you've got to, it's an absolute nightmare playing City. But I think a lot of teams are getting beaten by them in their own heads before they actually play the game, really.
And they shouldn't be, because they lost 9 already.
Well,
exactly. They're beatable, and a lot of teams aren't sort of approaching it as if it's a game they can get anything out of.
But Jim, is the age-old, I'm going to use the phrase, on the beach, is the age-old on the beach thing reared its head with Newcastle, who've now got 43 points, no realistic prospect of finishing any higher than, at a push, kind of probably 11th, and they won't finish any lower than whatever it is,
it could absolutely
14th.
Be that, yeah.
It's just, I mean, what when you watched the highlights, because as you guys know, you made me watch West Ham Burnley, so I didn't see this game live. I watched the highlights, and I did think to myself when I saw Foden miss a couple of those chances, just thought, what's the point? What is the point of this? What I mean, because yesterday, I think you, Jim, you were talking yesterday on the show about how you think the standard has, the people have settled into their rhythm a bit more now. Do you regret that, having watched what you watched at Man City last night?
They won 5-0.
No, Newcastle.
Oh, Newcastle. Yeah, well, you know what? Actually, because of, you know, there is an argument that the Newcastle players are on the beach. Maybe it's muscle memory. Maybe their bodies are going, I'd be on a beach now, normally. So I'm just going to get into that mode. There must be a mistake going on here.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're players that are potentially playing for their futures, given the whole takeover thing. And the same is true of Steve Bruce as well. So it's pretty slack if they have gone into it with that attitude. But then it's, you know, the golfing quality is obviously pretty massive, and you know they do struggle for goals really, Newcastle. Although, you know, it gets been better since the restart, but I don't know. Yeah, it was all just a bit unedifying.
Yeah, If it didn't feel like a proper game, and that's all I can say about it, really.
That's right. It felt like a training game.
Yeah, it really did. I actually watched bits of it with the fake crowd sound off, but when the fake crowd sound was on, we've actually had an email about this.
All right.
Yeah, from Craig Norton. Thanks, Craig. He said, the sound guys for the crowd noise are becoming a commentator of sorts. Kevin De Bruyne ran into a crowd of Newcastle players and had his path blocked. The referee says no foul, but the crowd noise gives a big shout of disapproval and beautifully well-timed.
Yeah, so
yeah, nice spot, Craig.
So the crowd noise person is essentially now becoming a curator of the flow of the match, basically.
Yeah. Well,
so
you've got to be, haven't you?
Like, he's obviously not influencing the game because the game, they can't hit that in the game, but for the viewing public it probably is a big change.
Director of vibes.
Yeah, because there was one, yeah, like Bez. The Bez of like the Bez of Premier League football. I started off liking the crowd noise and now I've kind of stopped liking it because it feels with that kind of thing, and when like a chance goes wide, it's almost like Martin Keown's on the button. It takes like 10 seconds to get what's happening.
Yeah, like with the Phil Foden
Phil Foden was a great example, and it comes along so much later, it just feels like really jarring. So I prefer to have it off now.
Yeah, I suppose you could fall into a routine with it. When I moved out to Doha, I really, really initially enjoyed the Arabic commentary. I used to listen to things with Arabic commentary. But the style of Arabic commentary is very different to the style of English commentary.
Right.
So I hope I'm not being disrespectful to say, but the style is not so much let's provide useful information around this, which is not always the style of English commentary either, but I think that's what it aims to be. Arabic commentary is more about atmosphere. Yeah. So it would just be like, more like a kind of Italian thing. They'll just be like shouting, like goal, 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 or just the name of the player, Messi, 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 like for the entire half.
Is that because they don't have as much of a tradition of watching football, so they want to get people excited about it?
I don't know, but I guess it does ramp up the excitement, but it's not so good for you like sitting on the sofa.
I would prefer that to, I mean, I know Jim is probably going to leap to his defence at some point when I hit the threshold, but I would prefer that to Martin Keown, to be honest.
Oh, I actually really like Martin Keown.
I'm sure he's a lovely fella, but he has a very consistent way of not knowing what's happening, which I think is something that's important for a commentator. At least you agree with that, Jim.
What, to know what's going on?
Yeah.
I think it is a definite prerequisite that maybe needs addressing. But I do quite like the idea of this hype man thing.
Yes, that's
maybe
exactly what it is.
Get one of each.
Yeah.
Like if you get like, I don't know.
Isn't that just fan zone though?
Like, well,
so people interject
not if you,
with reality.
If you put it with a professional as well.
Yeah.
We've got a sort of gentle version of it with John Champion and Ali McCoist.
They're great.
Yeah.
I'd have them on every game. Yeah.
Yeah.
On every game. But the research is very, the thing about John Champion and Ali McCoist, and Mark is a huge proponent of them, is that because they don't work together very often, they get a lot of time to research. Mm. So they're dropping in trivia, fact bombs.
Yeah.
If they were doing every game, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of admin.
It's like the trip.
Yeah, it is a bit.
I think whoever, you know, if you're listening and you run a TV company, you're missing a trick, put them on as much as you can, give them whatever they need in terms of research.
Yeah.
And if you are listening, hopefully you guys are, to the Football Ramble, like Craig, send us an email.
Yeah.
show@footballrambledaily.com.
Yes.
Let's go to the London Stadium.
Yeah, I don't really want all my hard-fought slogging to be in vain, so I'm pleased we are actually going to cover it.
Yes, thank you. We're paying homage to your hard-fought slogging. Yeah.
To give people a little glimpse behind the curtain, on the WhatsApp group last night, I just got a message from Kate saying, Luke, you're doing West Ham Burnley. So, all right, thanks. And to be absolutely fair, it wasn't that bad.
From the sounds like it, it's quite a lot of talking points.
I think we can all agree I had reason to be kind of sceptical about spending 2 hours of my time on this, but it wasn't without merit. And I think that's the most we can ask for. The problem is, Jim, and you can come in on this, David Moyes just looks mad. He just looks mad now. Mm. Like, he's not had his hair cut. It's wet there, so he just looks incredibly challenging to look at these days.
Well, his true form is coming out, isn't it?
Yeah, it probably is, actually, yeah.
Yeah, so it's
someone's taken the portrait out of the attic and it's all coming to...
Finally, a reference I can get.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Lee.
But there was enough to enjoy, but the game was a lovely goal by Jay Rodriguez, fantastic header. Mm. Keeper couldn't get near it, really, and Sebastian Haller came on and almost scored with his first touch, or one of his first touches. And the reason he didn't is because Nick Pope played, who was absolutely outstanding and who is yeah, it's got to be in the conversation for England goalkeepers. I know we're not really talking about England much at the moment, but he was brilliant. If you bear in mind that West Ham were sort of fighting for their lives at the moment, I think they'll be okay, but they were fighting for their lives. They had over 20 shots and they didn't score. And so it was a really good rear guard performance from Burnley in a kind of last ditch way. One of the things that could have changed it is the challenge that James Tarkowski put in on, I think, Jared Bowen. Was it Jared Bowen?
I think it was.
Yeah. And for Arsenal fans among us, witnessing what happened to Eddie Nketiah, you would be forgiven for feeling a bit hard done by that he didn't walk for that, because it looked a very, very difficult challenge. It was pretty full on.
It did. And he also, he held his hands up straight away, didn't he? So it's not like it's one of those things that's just been missed. And I don't really know what the reason was for them not checking
so,
it.
So, but I was reading it. And obviously we've been doing football shows for a long time. But the laws change all the time, obviously. And the laws now, I feel like they're as more unclear than they've ever been. Mm. And there was, I don't know if this is relevant, but it's partly how the referee saw the incident in the first place, which means that VAR gets involved in a slightly different way. But it's also, if you lunge and are out of control and danger an opponent, one of the laws, I think it might be Law 12, says it doesn't matter if you intended it or not because you go.
Yeah.
If you didn't lunge, then the referee has to kind of judge whether you intended it or not. And I'm not saying that's definitely what happened, because, of course, we never hear from referees. We don't know.
Yeah.
But I feel like that might be the reason that Tarkowski got away with a yellow. If he was sent off, I think it could have been different, because West Ham spent the majority of the second half on the offensive and were very unlucky to not score. So Burnley have got Nick Pope to thank for that. And finally on that, 14 clean sheets for Burnley this season. I think that's more than any other team. Nick Pope's got more clean sheets than any other goalkeeper, I think.
And when you see things like Jordan Pickford in the Everton-Tottenham game, sort of nearly fumbling it into his own goal, I do agree with you on the old England
thing. I never
England
feel safe with Jordan Pickford in goal.
And it's felt like that for too long, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's felt like that for too long for it to be a sort of part of his kind of learning process. It's just a kind of facet of his character. But I would say, going back to the Tarkowski thing, for both of you really, I feel like, regardless of whatever the reason is, or you know, regardless of, you know, it's because of how the referee sort of reacted to it at the time. Do you not think, like, if that's not a red, then the system that judges these things is wrong?
Yeah,
potentially. Yeah, I mean, yes, it looked almost exactly the same as many other red cards in the last 2 days. Let alone,
it's weird that some of them should circumstantially just not be picked up.
But just on VAR, they were the, as I understand it, not to, as we wouldn't want to mislead our. Noble listeners.
Oh, they used to be a mislead. Don't worry about that.
Okay. It's, as I understand it, every major incident is checked. So I guess there they were applying, even if we don't know about it, even if it's not on in this stadium. I mean, who's that going to help? There's no one there.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It's being looked at. So that's even more baffling in a sense, because you've had several referees looking at it and thinking, in that instance, it's a clear and obvious.
Do you remember that Aubameyang one for Arsenal? Was it last season or earlier this season, where he goes over the top of the ball and gets sent off? And you think, okay, he's gone over the top of the ball, the studs are up, you can see why that happens. But it feels like what they're kind of admitting is that every incident is, in and of itself, completely separate and completely original, completely different. And so
there's
like a new set of parameters has to be applied every time. And that, I wonder if that's the most helpful thing, basically.
That's exactly the issue we had with the Lucas Moura handball Harry Kane disallowed Sheffield United.
Yeah, that pissed me off at the time.
Did it?
Yeah, it's just bollocks. What they do into the game with that bollocks. I said it at the time. I don't need to say it.
Game's gone, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got hell in a handcart, mate.
I don't even know what we're doing here.
David Moyes is carrying the handcart that we're all in.
You couldn't make it up.
He's going to take us across the threshold into the world of the dead. Kate, I'm looking at you. Move it on.
Someone who's not in the world of the dead, just briefly before we go to a break, is Chris Wilder, who at Bramall Lane pulled his calf celebrating the injury time winner for Sheffield United against Wolves.
I love that because it's ultimately, and I'm not going to make any friends at Sheffield United for saying this, it is still quite an inconsequential goal, but he's celebrated so much he's pulled a leg. It's great.
Sheffield United could be going into Europe, Luke.
Yeah,
you're not going to make many friends at Bramall Lane with that kind of chat. And if you consider the other day, on Tuesday, when we were talking about Carlo Ancelotti and Jose Mourinho meeting on the touchline, the last time they met was in the Champions League last 16 and they had, you know, titles and silverware coming out of their ears. Mm. The last time that these two sides met, they were both in League One. So...
Oh, it's amazing.
Put it in that context, you know.
I'm not saying...
Look, obviously stretch before you celebrate, perhaps, if you're Chris Wilder, but I applaud the
My rationale very, very quickly is just that they need to pick up a good amount of points realistically between now and the end of the season. They've played Chelsea next. They've got Leicester away. They play Everton. They play Southampton. All those teams have shown something. It's hard for them to pick up a lot of points in those four games, I think. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
All the more reason to celebrate, isn't it? It's a good platform to build on.
Yeah. Right,
fair enough.
You're cynic.
Fair enough. They'll be fine. They'll get Europa League. What about that? How about that? Great. And I'll love it. I'll absolutely love it, Kate.
Your cynicism has no place here.
Don't shake your head on there, that people can't hear it.
Right, I'm going to work on that in the break, which is now.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
All right, welcome back to the Football Ramble. Luke and... No, you're not Pete.
I can try and be Pete if you like. Oh, tech. Weird Japanese food. Someone sent me some dog meat and I'm just eating it. That actually sort of happened once when we were recording in...
It's XFM Jim, by the way, guys.
For those who don't, obviously can't see, which is everyone, Jim's waving his hands around like Pete always does. Like, does Pete do that? He does a bit.
I don't know. Maybe.
Sort of. He doesn't sound like that, though.
No, well, you know. Yeah. I'm not going to do an impression of Pete. I'll have to go away and work on that.
Tell us about the dog meat.
Well, I don't know if it was dog meat, but he... There was a time where we were recording in somewhere else where Pete worked, and he was eating this bag of... It was some sort of meat, but he didn't know what it was because the packaging wasn't English. And he was talking about how weird it was that someone had sent him that while he was eating
listener.
It.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Listener, yeah. Is this the same as the steak that got sent to him, or is that a separate thing?
Not sure, I think.
Oh, right.
Although, speaking of steak, I once went for breakfast with Pete before we played football together, and I had scrambled eggs on toast because we were playing football. He had steak tartare.
It's just horrifying.
Good man.
And then was horrifying.
Violently sick after the game. So,
oh, right.
Yeah, good.
I was thinking that's quite Muhammad Ali. Perhaps he was just trying to... Yeah, yeah, different. He used to have, what was it, like 6 steaks and 14 eggs every breakfast.
I'm doing a lot of work mentally here to try and compare Pete Donaldson to Muhammad Ali for a lot of reasons. Jim, is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah. Not really an awful lot in common, if you don't mind me saying.
Floats like a maniac, stings like a maniac. Yeah. Best I can do, really.
Yeah, doesn't really let his hands go either. Yeah.
Well...
Although at least his hands are normal size, Kate.
Oh my goodness, mate. Luke said, "Oh, Kate, I'm going to take the piss out of you so much today, and it's only just started, so I'm quite nervous."
Yeah.
On the subject of culinary skill or lack thereof, or choices for breakfast, we're going to have a little jaunt over to the States now. I think,
okay,
because MLS is back in the MLS is back Cup. That's how they've titled it. Nice. Does what it says on the tin. I mean, that's to be applauded. 54 games in Orlando, Florida. Should probably point out that Florida is basically the one of the epicentres of coronavirus at the moment. Kind of new daily record cases keep coming. So it's, it seems like a slightly unusual choice. But the idea is that they are all in Disney World together and no one goes anywhere and everyone's kind of segregated and they're going to just play all of these games of football and decide who's won the MLS. Carlos Vela, who's the league's reigning MVP, he's withdrawn, but his wife is pregnant. It's not, you know, we don't think it's a kind of protest. But the food reference is that Omar Gonzalez, the Toronto FC defender, tweeted this picture of something that looked like it was at a fire festival, a sort of sandwich box.
Crazy to get a reminder of fire festival.
Yeah.
That was a mad thing. That feels like almost unbelievably quaint now.
It does.
But obviously, it was quite traumatic for a large number of people. But the documentary was magnificent, and I just completely forgotten it had happened. And then I remember that Ja Rule was involved.
Mm. Oh my goodness!
And I think if MLS were going to bring football back, which they obviously are attempting to do, and they have done because there was a game last night, to be compared to fire festivals, probably not what they were after.
No, it's not ideal.
And it made me think, Jim, of this is not just food; this is MLS food.
Very good.
That's what I want to get. That was a big build up, but there you go.
Yeah, worth it. Worth it. Yeah, but if you've not seen the images of it, it is like a really sort of very, very basic sandwich and a banana that was. Oh my God. He said it was. He said it cost something like $65, was it? But didn't it turn out that he was actually in Toronto when this happened? And so there's a little bit of kind of weirdness happening.
Debunk this, Jim. Come on.
It's not clear whether the food itself is being provided by the place they're in to play football again. There's been talk that the food was delivered before they went to Orlando, and it was, as Jim says, it was in Toronto. But as you alluded to, Kate, it does seem a very, very strange decision to make to bring this back when they're in such a middle of such a crisis. It's not just Florida. I mean, FC Dallas have gone home because Dallas in Texas is another place where they've had a really bad problem with the virus. And it just seems a little bit surreal that these players, I mean, Bradley Wright Phillips came out and said, obviously he's, you know, come towards the end of his career now and he's playing for LAFC and ex Red Bulls, of course. He came out and said, it's a bit weird. I mean, I just sit in my hotel room playing Call of Duty and I go and play or train and I go back again. I don't see anyone and I'm not going to be able to go to associate with any other human beings. I think what they're doing is they're trying, my admittedly amateur assessment of this is that they've seen what's happened in Germany and Spain and Italy and obviously in England and said, if we employ this kind of bubble situation, we can make this happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it can happen because of several reasons. One, the US is massive. One, it's got the biggest cases of COVID pretty much anywhere in the developed world. So very, very difficult situation there. And I can completely understand, as I can, by the way, any player in Europe not wanting to do it and not wanting to play. And so I wonder what the integrity of the competition is going to be like going forward.
Yeah, you mentioned looking at how things have worked in Europe. And I wonder also if, much like, you know, the Bundesliga obviously started a long time before other leagues in Europe did, perhaps the smallest football league in Europe, you know, the MLS is back, but none of the other actual, you know, soccer is not as big in the States, let's face it, as it is anywhere in the world, pretty much. So it looks a tiny bit as though they're trying to like seize the advantage and get ahead of before the NBA gets back, American football is being played.
I was reading this morning that if things don't improve with MLS and carry on through to NBA, who are also in the same place, then the NFL isn't going to start. And the NFL's massive, obviously, in the US. And so they're maybe using it as a little bit of a litmus test. But Bundesliga guy, Christian Seifert, I think his name is, said, he made it clear. He said, look, when the Bundesliga came back for the first week, he said, we know the eyes of the world are on us here. It's a test for us every single week. And just because we've done a successful first weekend doesn't mean we're going to have a successful second one. We've got to keep working. And if it was tremendously important the Bundesliga got it right because it showed a pathway for other countries to be able to do it. But you have to be in a certain position in terms of your country's response to the virus, clearly, before you can do it. So I read about it this morning in The Athletic. There's a brilliant article in there about what's happening, written by Paul Tenorio and Sam Stejkal. And I implore anyone to read it. It's fascinating what's happening. It doesn't seem like it's the brightest situation imaginable, but I wish health and safety to everyone there. I really do.
There's been a lot of surreal things that have happened throughout the coronavirus situation, but like being locked away in a theme park, effectively, it's so strange.
It's quite dystopian, isn't it?
It is dystopian as well, because actually, obviously, You know, that sounds quite fun on the top level, doesn't it? But I'm sure they're not all kind of like riding around on roller coasters and stuff like that. And as Bradley Wright Phillips says, he's just in his room playing Call of Duty. And the whole thing, I kind of really feel for everyone involved in it. It just must, I mean, it's a horrible situation to find yourself in anyway, even if you're stuck at home. But to be in an unfamiliar surrounding like that, just. Such a shame.
With so many people, yeah, as you say, testing positive.
We haven't even mentioned a 97th minute winner for Nani.
No, yeah. And actually in that, but we are going to mention in that game, clearly over here, you know, in the Premier League, people are continuing to take a knee indefinitely, it seems like, which is a really interesting and kind of useful way, I think, of using football to convey a message. And so overnight in that game between Orlando City and Inter Miami, some players were wearing T-shirts that said black and proud, some silence is violence, which is kind of an interesting concept and a really stark image. And they took a knee for 8 minutes, 46 seconds, which is the period of time during which George Floyd was knelt on until he died. So kind of extraordinary scene, really, and quite beautiful.
But it's the first sort of sporting reference from within the US that we've seen since this happened. So it's obviously going to be tremendously powerful. Of course, these things translate across to other countries, and there's been a lot of solidarity shown around the world for this, which is heartening to see. But this is the first time I've seen how a sporting event would respond to what's happened, and it was incredibly powerful. I mean, and I know it sounds like a you know, perhaps even like a pretty basic thing to say, but 8 minutes 46 seconds is a long time. Yeah. When you count it out, it is a long time, and what kind of resulted was an incredibly powerful scene. Incredibly powerful. So yeah, it's interesting to see how this movement will continue when it becomes harder to continue it, if you know what I mean. But hopefully it will sustain.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking the same when watching the start of the cricket yesterday, and you know, that 1 minute does seem long. So yeah, it's people start a little bit shuffling towards the end of it. So to hold it onto it for that long is just
amazing. And then, by the way, in the cricket, England then lost the wicket straight away, and then it got rained. Then it rained, so things were going back to normal. I wonder if Danny Welbeck's overhead kick is starting to write the universe again.
Is that what it was for?
Because he's such a nice fella,
yeah,
and it's a great thing to see. If particularly the Jim, I know Jim's a fan of that guy.
Yeah, absolutely, that guy Welbs.
If I said to you, Danny Welbeck, who would you like someone to score an overhead kick in a neutral situation? Welbeck could be up there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
if I was given a selection of names and he was on the platter, then yeah, I'd probably gravitate towards unless it was, you know, any Arsenal player, obviously.
No, I think you would rather Welbeck score an overhead kick in a neutral situation than Shkodran Mustafi.
Surely.
On the international stage, absolutely.
Yeah.
Although it would be more unlikely for Mustafi to do it, so maybe that would have the benefit of entertainment. I
mean, he's more likely to be overhead kicked, as we saw, with the stud marks in his head.
Right, let's drop into Spain for what was called the biggest ever, Catalan derby. Barcelona 1, Espanyol 0. Barcelona win to keep pressure on Real Madrid at the top of La Liga. Espanyol.
It's kind of an apologetic pressure, isn't it? We are still very much going to keep up appearances, although we know the writing is on the wall.
Yeah,
hence all of the kind of chat about how hard it's all been.
There's some mad stuff broke, I think last night or this morning, about Messi as well. I was reading an article about that earlier.
It's not him going to Arsenal again, is it?
No. Saying that he's fed up of getting, he's fed up of all the euphemistic conversations that happen in the press about, in quotes, senior pros, always meaning him, kind of criticising. And what happened was he got caught, don't think it was in the Espanyol game, might have been the game before, at the drinks break. Quique Setién was given a little impromptu tactic talk, as they do, just to piss off Gary Neville.
Yeah.
And Lionel Messi wasn't involved. He was just like staring somewhere else. And lots been made of that, apparently. So,
well, it's all this stuff about the contract as well, isn't it?
Do you know what I bloody love, Kate? I would bloody love Messi to go to Juventus and play in the same team as Ronaldo.
Oh, imagine it.
I don't think...
It'd be like Avengers Assemble. What's it called?
Endgame. It would be like that, yeah. It would...
They can't afford it, I don't think, but it'd be amazing.
No, I don't think anyone could afford it, surely.
Has he done what Rivaldo did famously when he wanted to leave Barcelona, where he priced himself out of every club on the planet and then got pissed off?
Yeah.
It's like, but your wage demands are so high that it's almost like you've transcended the currency. So no one will buy you. So get over it. That might be what happens.
Yeah, perhaps. It could be.
But anyway, Espanyol got relegated, so that's probably the main story, isn't it?
Yeah. Sorry.
But not just relegated. Relegated by Luis Suarez.
Oh, it's the worst.
It's like your school bully repossessing your house.
Yeah, it is. Would you rather be relegated by Luis Suarez or John Terry?
John Terry's not going to bite me.
Or Carlos Tevez.
But then Luis Suarez would probably, you know, leave my theoretical girlfriend alone.
I'll tell you what's going to happen, Jim. I'll tell you what's going to happen. Luis Suarez scores the goal that sends you down. He's 100% rubbing it in your face, probably afterwards as well. John Terry will do that kind of faux modesty thing where he'll just be arrogantly kind of just stroll off. What you're worried about is what I do. And it depends what you would prefer.
I think still Suarez.
Fair enough.
Yeah, just like my gut reaction.
Yeah, is, fair enough.
You've ruined my day. Yeah. Right. Yeah, firstly, yeah. Just make him even think about that. Yeah, but Suarez enough. Is what I've leant towards.
Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, it is disappointing for Espanyol, who have been like kind of a fixture in the top flight for many a year, haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, it's only one season out of the top flight since 1928.
So would it be time for Mauricio Pochettino to ride over there and save the day? He can't save the day now. It's gone. But bring him back again, I mean.
I mean, it's quite poetic. It would only be poetic, I guess, if he were to bring them back and then make them win the league ahead of, or at least finish above Barcelona.
Or he could take them right up there, moan a bit about not having enough players, and then unceremoniously leave after a big European defeat.
Yeah, have loads of opportunities to go quite far in the cup competitions, decide that like winning cups is sort of beneath him. Yeah. Could do that, couldn't he?
He's talking about Southampton. He's about Southampton.
I've left.
Yeah. Kate Mason's left the chat.
you hurt Pochettino, you hurt me.
There are a couple of, as you said, a couple of naughty red cards in that game.
Very naughty incidents. Yeah. Or, would we say, as it turned out, in a James Tarkowski challenge, not a big deal at all.
Not bothered, yeah.
What's the issue? Why the two red cards?
I've got a big test for Jim Campbell here, of my colleague of many a year standing. Tell me, because I wrote this down and I reckon you did too. Was there anything weird about the red cards?
They're orange.
Yeah, it's an orange card. That's what I read
down.
It's
the first thing I saw.
The red card the referee had in his pocket was fucking orange.
They got a little picture on them as well.
The player is well within his rights of saying, I don't know what that means.
So what, I can stay on for 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, it could be that new system, the kind of red card for a bit. Yeah, well, like simbining, like in rugby.
Yeah, I've been given a don't do it again card.
In both cases... they were yellows upgraded to a red. So perhaps that is what that is.
So they do sim binning in some non-league levels in this country now. My friend's a non-league ref and the league he referees in, which I forget, does have a 10-minute sim bin that he's used a few times this season.
I think it's quite a good idea, to be honest. It's especially good for that like non-double jeopardy of the penalty plus the red card.
Yeah. They've changed that though.
Yes.
Yeah, they've changed that to an extent. So that, I think that's worked... To be fair, that's actually worked quite well.
Whoa, was that praise for refereeing?
I think that's worked quite well. I have no problem with referees. I have problems with the parameters they're asked to referee under. That's the problem. Mm. But yeah, two red cards in that game. But the main takeaway was that they were orange. And I think Ansu Fati of Barcelona, having been presented with the orange card, might have a legal case to not serve a suspension because I think he could legitimately say he wasn't sure what an orange card, but he's only
young. That is a rouged yellow at best. And also there's a picture on it. Why is there a picture on it?
Was there a picture on it?
I don't know what it's of. I couldn't quite make it out.
No, because the referee sometimes write the names of the players on the cards.
Mm. They know don't know who you are.
No, because in case they've already been booked.
Right.
But that's how that only worked for a yellow.
Yeah, or if he was planning to go on an absolute... Because that was only in the 50th minute, that Ansu Fati won, and then the next one came in the 53rd minute, so perhaps he was just planning to go on a massive tear and he needed to make sure he knew exactly who he'd given all the red cards to.
Yeah.
Maybe he's planning to run out.
Yeah, could be. You never know. I mean, just get a red... I mean, I just feel like it should be a basic requirement. You know, have a red card. Where's he bought that from? Yeah, I mean, if he's buying it from like a referee's apparel shop, it should be red.
Take it out of his hands if this is what's happening.
Do you remember when they had round circle ones?
Yes.
So,
was that for colourblind players?
No, I think it was because so the referee didn't pull the wrong card out of his pocket.
Nice. Right.
So he could fit it in his pocket and the circle one would be red. And I feel like at the time, I feel like that there should have been more made of that.
Yeah.
Like the referee, there should have been some kind of press release. By the way, from now on, the red cards will be round.
Or like when he gives it out, he has to put it over his eye like a monocle.
Like that guy with the hook. Yeah. He looked through it all the time. Anyway, I'll tell you who else got sent off at the last night.
Oh, yeah.
And it was probably the standout red card of a packed showcase of red cards was Derby's Louis Sibley.
Oh, yeah.
Who got sent off against West Brom for kicking someone in the knackers.
Cheeky.
That's old school, that.
That's very cheeky.
It is old school, isn't it, Jim? Don't you reckon?
Very dangerous.
It was written up as for apparently attempting to kick his way out of a tangle of legs. So what I wonder is...
Well, I can clear that up right
now. Where were those?
No, because it wasn't that.
It sounds nightmarish, doesn't it? Like some sort of Lovecraft-style hellish situation. Kicking you out of a tangle of legs.
First of all, Louis Sibley is so young that he could probably legitimately say that he was trying to fight off a bully. Aww, he was at school
18,
or something.
Yeah.
And secondly, it wasn't a tangle of legs. The West Brom player was lying on the floor. The referee stopped the game and he booted him in the bonnet.
Oh, my God.
Because I think the danger there, right, is you could make someone infertile.
Yeah.
So that's way more than a foul. You could have stopped entire generations of people there.
Orange card.
Sit out for 10 minutes. That's actually Derby's sixth red card this season. So they've got the most in the Championship. So perhaps he was just trying to help out with records. Hmm. Just a quick glance ahead to tonight's games, featuring someone else who has absolutely no problem with referees whatsoever. It's Bournemouth up against Spurs. No Eric Dier. He's got a full match ban for that incident where he ran into the crowd to defend his brother. Yeah. Jose Mourinho says they're not going to challenge it.
If I speak, I'm in trouble. That's all Jose Mourinho says.
It's boring now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like he's doing the hits, but...
Yeah.
He doesn't know what the hits are. He spent all the Be Here Now songs.
He spent so long doing all this stuff that it's all implied.
Mm.
He could just probably just pull out a piece of paper and go, quote two. And all the press just go, yeah, thanks. Yeah.
That's actually not a bad idea.
If I speak, I'm in trouble, yeah.
Yep.
And I think the Eric Dier ban is so long ago that he did it. I wonder if he could sort of have some kind of legal defence of the statute of limitations, because it feels to me like it happened in about 1986.
Again, like, in what other generation would you forget that?
No, exactly.
He went into the crowd.
It'd be a massive story.
Yeah, it's mad.
Yeah. That'd be an interesting game. Be good. Because Bournemouth are absolutely abysmal, and it'll be a really good test of what Spurs are like, because they've been very inconsistent.
2-0 Bournemouth. So, Everton, Southampton also at 6 o'clock. Southampton could be amazing. Who knows? And the 8:15 kickoff is Aston Villa up against Manchester United. Paul Pogba apparently is going to stay at Manchester United, intriguingly. Solskjaer says they're hopeful of agreeing a new contract. And on the other side, Sky Sports have been billing it as the ultimate addition for Jack Grealish, although not if Graham Souness has got anything to do with it.
No. I think Jack Grealish is almost certain to move on, because I do think Aston Villa will be relegated, and I'd like to see him carry on plying his trade in the Premier League. And I think Man United have been absolutely fantastic, as everyone does since they've come back. I'm really excited to see Mason Greenwood play, because I think he'll probably start again against a team who are quite generous. So you might see both of his lovely feet in action again tonight.
Mm. The form they've been in, this could be a tough evening for Villa. Bless them.
Yeah.
Oh, good to see a generous team, like Newcastle.
Yeah.
All right then.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for a lovely time, guys.
Oh, was it a lovely time?
Yeah, it was actually. Yeah.
Good.
Say bye, Luke Moore.
I enjoyed it too. Bye.
Say bye, Jim.
Bye.
I've been Kate Mason. Oh, I'll tell you who's on tomorrow.
Yeah, go ahead. I know I can tell you if you want.
Yeah, go on then.
No, I won't. It's your job as the host. Quite literally.
Wow, a sledge to end with. How perfect. Join us tomorrow on the previous show. It will be Marcus, Andy, and who, Luke?
Me.
Perfect.
Luke's game, Marcus v Andy, Clash of the Titans. It's going to be exciting. I'm excited for it.
I'm excited to hear it. See you soon, guys. Bye.
This was a Stakhanov production.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.